Greetings to all you out there in podcast land. This is Adam Voigt, and you're listening to The Aristotle Project. The Aristotle Project works to bring back ancient wisdom for the modern world. We do have original thoughts and our own philosophy separate from Aristotle, but unless you understood Aristotle, you wouldn't understand anything we have to say that's original. So we created this so that you could catch up with us someday. But along the way, Aristotle is quite a roller coaster ride. So buckle up and we're on our way. What is knowledge? What is the highest knowledge? Can the highest knowledge be gained from observation of nature? Can it be gained from mathematics? Can we find it in religious myths? What is ultimately real? What is substantially real? These are the questions asked by Aristotle in the Book of Books, Book Alpha of the Metaphysics. And our current series deals with this very short but very difficult work. I hope you'll enjoy the Aristotle Project.
Okay, good evening. This is Adam and Ada again, and here we are for another chapter of the Metaphysics. So, Ada, what did you find most interesting about chapter one?
I liked the discussion on difference between animal and human.
Mm-hmm.
And art. I liked the thoughts on art.
Yeah, so what do you think he means when he says art? It's not like what we mean by that word, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that maybe somewhere through the translation, I have no idea, but I think it's definitely different because
mm-hmm.
art, like here, is something, somebody creative.
Mm-hmm.
would come up with, and I mean, it's kind of similar, I guess.
Well, for him, it's not something new that you create when you use skill. There's a form,
mm-hmm.
and you're taking the form and you're putting it into matter. So the form already exists.
But that part is the art, like yeah. putting it into the matter is the art.
Yeah, that's what he means. So that's mm-hmm. what technique is, or skill. So it's kind of just like building a house. There's the form of the house and you
mm-hmm.
put it in the matter. So that's cool. And I think, for me, the thing I think is most interesting or came out in the first chapter was people in the modern world think that truth and goodness are not the same or very different things.
Mm-hmm.
But from Aristotle's view, goodness and truth and I think we'll see beauty are very closely linked, and you can't really have knowledge. If you don't believe in goodness, then you don't believe in knowledge, according to Aristotle. And if you don't believe in knowledge, then you can't believe in goodness, according to his view as well. But I think that'll be more clear later on. But that's related to the discussion about animals, too. It's very interesting how there's three levels of things that exist, and there's non-living, there's living, then there's animals, then there's humans. And it's interesting how he weaves the relation of those three, actually the four concepts, together through the whole philosophy. But we'll see more of that today.
What's the fourth?
Oh, okay, so the four are non-living, then you have merely living, then you have animate, like animals,
yeah.
then you have rational animals.
So like human, animal, plant, or whatever the heck
uh-huh.
else, and stuff, objects.
Yeah, so it's,
okay.
so just like, and I think this is probably the most interesting thing I've gotten from him, is the essence of reason. And it's different from animals and its relation to animals. I think that relationship can be seen more clearly if we understand the difference between an animal and a merely living thing, and the difference between merely living things and non-living things. So that's how Aristotle sees it, and he sees knowledge as being the essence in that last step from animals to humans. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty neat. Anyway, we'll learn more about that later. So, chapter 2 just sort of extends, talks about something that he got into in the last, and we talked a lot about in the last episode, and that is that there is a hierarchy in knowledge. So just like when you talk about things being good, you imply that there's a hierarchy. So not only just that certain things are more good than others, in one sense you could say that, you know, there could be like a bed that's more comfortable than another bed, and or maybe a bed that's bigger than another bed, something like that. And that bed would be better.
Well, that doesn't necessarily, it depends on those people's preferences, so that's, I feel like, true. That's not exactly.
But if you're saying that something, that's one type of goodness, right? But the most, that plays a role in his view of knowledge. But another thing that plays a role, way that goodness plays a role in his view of knowledge, is that certain things that you do are good for something else that's higher than that. So like we build a house so that people can live in the house. Mm-hmm. And then we live in the house so that we can do something else, I suppose. I'm not sure what the purpose of living in a house is, but then whatever we do when we're living in the house, we do for another reason.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that's a thing, that's another sort of hierarchy, and that both those kinds of hierarchies, better than, worse than, or for the purpose of, those sorts of goodness hierarchies are very important for understanding this concept of knowledge. And this is the aspect that he talks about in this one. So, I think for this episode, we'll just read. This is only 2 pages that he's written here, and it's 6 paragraphs. So, we'll use the same format that we did last time, and I'll read this paragraph, which is about 20 lines, and then we'll talk about it. Okay, chapter 2, quote, "Since we are seeking this knowledge, we must inquire of what kind are the causes and the principles, the knowledge of which is wisdom. If one were to take the notions that we have about the wise men, this might perhaps make the answer more evident. We suppose first, then, that the wise man knows all things as far as possible, although he has not knowledge of each of them in detail. Secondly, that he who can learn things that are difficult and not easy for people to know is wise. For example, sense perception is common to all and therefore easy and no mark of wisdom. Again, that he who is more exact and more capable of teaching the causes is wiser and in every branch of knowledge. That of the sciences also, that of which is desirable on its own account, and for the sake of knowing, it is more of the nature of wisdom than that which is desirable on account of the results. And the superior science is more of the nature of wisdom than the ancillary. For the wise man must not be ordered about, but must order others, and he must not obey others, but the less wise must obey him." That's the end of paragraph. So, in this one, he's talking about knowledge, and he's just, in this paragraph, he's only talking about general opinions that people have, and he's not really going too deep. And this is a common thing that Aristotle does. So, what are the general opinions? So, we mentioned last time that a wise person knows everything, right? But yet, not all the details, not every fact, right? You know, like, he may not know where Pluto is right now.
But he knows how the sun has little objects orbiting around.
Yeah. And like, what are the principles? He may be able to figure it out, you know? And that's kind of what your teachers in school will tell you, that, you know, you don't really, what we're trying to teach you is not really the facts, but just, you know.
I feel like it's half and half.
Yeah, it's something like that. You do need to retain some of the facts, but most important is the general, how it all hangs together.
Yeah, well, first right? we learn that, and then we learn the little things.
Yeah. And so, of course, you need to learn a lot of little things before you learn how they all hang together. But once you get the picture of how they all hang together, then you can sort of forget the facts, you know, here and there. You know, some of the facts. You got to retain some of them. But, I mean, you know what I'm saying? You're trying to get the big picture in your head. And that's one reason why you need the facts in a certain sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can look it up. You can look up lots of stuff. You know, and, you know, some facts you need to retain. But a wise person, their wisdom, which distinguishes them from others who are not so wise, is not in knowing certain facts. You know, it's knowing the why of things. The why of all the facts. You know? So, That's the key thing, is that he's talking about. So then, you have to understand things which are difficult as well. And so fewer people can understand that. That's kind of interesting, I guess. But then you have to, you know things in a more accurate sense. And then another thing is, you're more capable of understanding explanations and causes. And then your knowledge is more inherently good and not instrumental. So you know what that means? Like, we talked about that last time. Do you remember that? What kind of knowledge is inherently good?
The knowledge of, like, the root knowledge?
Yeah, well, okay. Oh, yeah. So there's two ways that you can answer this question. And you're talking about, you're choosing one of them, which is the hierarchy of sciences, like subfields and more general sciences, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about.
Well, I think that would help you figure out, like, that would help you, like, live better. Unless you need, like, a job that specializes in something.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how you live, I guess.
Well, what's an example of two sciences, one of which is better than the other in the sense that you're talking about?
Two sciences?
Or two forms of knowledge. Okay, you know what I'm talking about.
No.
So there's two ways in which, so he talks about how one science or one form of knowledge can be more wise or better than another if it's more universal.
Mm-hmm.
And, but then there's also another sense in which theoretical science is better than productive science. This is a different way in which...
Oh, you mean like pursuing knowledge just because you want to is better than doing it because you have to?
Well, that's one thing. And, like, it's one way of saying it. Like, no one would study philosophy for the money, right? But you do study productive sciences for the money,
mm-hmm.
you know? And for same thing with actually mathematics, which is a theoretical science for Aristotle. People study math, and they go on to do things that make money, but yet they don't get paid. Oh, they're like, nobody hires them because they study math. It's because, you know, in studying math, you learn things, and then you do learn these other things. And then those other things, which you learn as a result of just being a math grad student, then you get hired for that. And so, like, people do tend to find higher level, more abstract science is more inherently good than the productive sciences,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's those are two different ways. That there's the more universal and general, but then there's also how thing when you're producing things, then that's less inherently good than just knowing things, right? And that's very important for Aristotle. And I think it's you can, like, for example, for Aristotle, Aristotle doesn't believe that God made the world. So, like, if you think God made the world, then you think God's knowledge is good because he was able to produce the world from it. He has productive skill, right? Whereas Aristotle thinks that God is just this mind that is some floating in some hyperspace somewhere, and somehow the universe just follows his thoughts. You know, and the universe has always been. God didn't make it. And so God's knowledge is theoretical. You know, it's the ideal. It's the perfect thing to think about that humans, if they could think about it for just 1 second of their life, would just be, you know, realize that that's the ultimate happiness. That's what he thinks God does all the time. He didn't think God made the world. So, like, that's a...
Wait, so the universe is like God's mind to him?
Well, no, actually, he thinks that all the matter in the universe, even living creatures and the planets, all act the way they do out of love for God, out of trying to be like God. And that every bit of matter, and the more perfect the thing is, like so the planets and the stars, the more closely they're able to approximate God's thoughts. But the lower a thing is, non-living matter, like rocks, that's the thing which is least able to approximate God's thoughts. So human beings are slightly, because we can catch hints of God's thinking, we're better than any other living creature. But living creatures are still very beautiful, and Aristotle says that even very small, simple living creatures are beautiful and elegant, and people should study them, and that they their life cycle. That's something he gets into. We'll get into later when we get into Book Lambda about how a living creature acts out of love for God. And it has to do with the life cycle. Okay, anyway, so wisdom must be inherently good knowledge and not instrumental. And it can't be subsumed by some other science. And it has to be authoritative or supervisory rather than subsidiary. So it has to be like architecture and not like building the house. Like the house builder, right?
Yeah.
And it has to be like science and not like medicine. And it has to be like medicine, but not like nursing, right? And it has to be like, what's another science that bosses around another study? You know, like the car automotive engineer as opposed to the guy who fixes cars, right?
Or the guy who built it.
Yeah, or the guy who's the production engineer, mm-hmm. right? Or the production foreman, right? Who sets up the machines in order to make this model of car, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the person who knows, why is the car like this?
Rather than the person who knows, oh, this is how the car is, I need to make it like this.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when you learn, like, why cars are like this, and, you know, why don't we have flying cars, and why don't we have electric cars yet, and lots of things about cars. Those people are higher up. They have more inherently good knowledge. They're wiser, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but still, someone who designs cars is still producing something, which is the design of a car. So there must be some science higher than that, according to Aristotle. That's what he's looking for. And so those are the common views on it, right? So what are his views? He thinks that, like, he's trying to fine-tune the common views. So he says that wisdom, with a capital W, must... Oh, wait. Let's pause. Let's read another paragraph. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So such and so many are the notions, then, that we have about wisdom and the wise. Now, all these characteristics, that of knowing all things must belong to him who has in the highest degree universal knowledge. For he knows in a sense that all the instances that fall under his knowledge fall under the universal. And these things, the most universal, are on the whole the hardest for men to know. For they are the furthest from the senses, and the most exact of the sciences are those which deal with first principles. For those which involve fewer principles are more exact than those which involve additional principles. For example, arithmetic is more fundamental than geometry. But the science which investigates causes is also instructive in a higher degree. For the people who instruct us are those who tell us the causes of each thing. And understanding and knowledge pursued for their own sake are found most in the knowledge of that which is most knowable. That's an interesting concept, most knowable. For he who chooses to know for the sake of knowing will choose most readily that which is most truly knowledge, and such is the knowledge of that which is most knowable. And the first principles and the causes are most knowable. For by reason of these, and from these, all other things come to be known, and not these by means of the things subordinate to them. And the science which knows to what end each thing must be done is the most authoritative of the sciences, and more authoritative than any ancillary science. And this end is the good of that thing, and in general, the supreme good in the whole of nature. Judged by all the general, the supreme good, judged by all the tests we have mentioned then, the name in question falls to the same science. This must be a science that investigates the first principles and causes, for the good, that is the end, is one of the causes. Okay, so you can see that goodness and truth are like really connected, just in his definition of things. And I think that the newest thing that came out of this, like he's gone over the more general or universal science is the highest, that which is most enjoyable or most inherently good, that which bosses around the less knowledgeable things or people, right? He's talked about those before. Those are all related to goodness and like less good. But there's another thing he brought up, most knowable. Now, what's that mean? Like, the highest science must be that which is most knowable. Most suitable for knowledge. Is there something that's more knowable than another?
Does he mean, like, easiest to know? Because I don't think the highest knowledge is the easiest to know.
That's true. It's not.
So
it's the hardest. In fact, he says it's got to be hard. It's got to be harder than everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom, right? Well, when he says knowable, so that which is most knowable, in a sense, like, for example, 2 + 2 = 4, right? Like, once you know that, it's very knowable, right?
But you gotta know why.
Yeah, and you, in one sense, it's clear and distinct. That's one way that Descartes talked about it, that you could just see that it's true just by, like, looking at it, right? But if you tried to prove it logically or mathematically, it would be very difficult. And indeed, the proving the fundamental principles of arithmetic is the most difficult part of math theory.
Is just saying, okay, so this is 1,
mm-hmm.
and then this is 2, mm-hmm. so this is 2 even though it's 1, and then this is another 2, and then we add 2 of the 2s together, and now we count 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. Well, if you're doing it with actual concrete objects, like, so you have one sock here, and then you have another sock, and you put them next to each other, and then you count it, well, that's very clear and easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
But yet you don't really know it because you're just, you don't know mathematical truth by having things in front of you. You know, and like if this was how you know 1 + 1 = 2 by having two socks, then what you could do is you could say, well, let's confirm this experiment with like shoes, right? Let's see if it works with shoes, right? And let's see if it works with, you know, all the animals going onto Noah's Ark, right? Oh, there's one lion. Oh, there's another lion. Oh, there's two lions going in. Oh, good. Okay, now let's see if it works with giraffes. There's one giraffe. There's two giraffes. Okay.
So one is an object or person or place, whatever. And then you have two ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is difficult. Like, if there's one, and then you have another one, and each of these ones are the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then how do they, like, make two? It's actually a very difficult question. And we'll come back to it in the course of Aristotle, because people argued about this even back in his day. And he thinks that the Pythagoreans and the Platonists are completely wrong on how two ones can make two, right? Like, where does the two come in, right? And people disagree with it.
Two ones.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you have one.
So there are two.
You have another one. And then you have two, right? And so, like, how that happens is not, it's very difficult. I don't know if actually mathematicians are actually in agreement as to how you get two from two ones. I think
it's so simple, but it's so weird.
Yeah, but some of them argue about it. But I don't think there's, you know, like I think I mentioned the other day how there's still at least three schools of math theory about like what's called the theory of mathematical foundations. And this is, what is math? What the heck makes math true? What are we talking about when we say 2 + 2 = 4 or 1 + 1 = 2? Are we talking about words that we define such that these truths are true and it follows from the definitions? Or are we directly intuiting something out of the structure of reality, right? It's, you know, nobody agrees on it. And it's difficult to even understand what the different points of view that mathematicians have on this. And so that's because it's more distant from sense. But when you just get, like, socks in front of you and you start counting them, you count this one sock and you have another sock, well, then, boom, it's, like, right in front of you and you can't not see it, right? So that can't be wisdom, right? You know, but what is closer to wisdom is knowing, like, well, what are numbers and how are numbers different or similar to, like, rocks? And then how are rocks and numbers similar to and different from living creatures? Like, how are living creatures different from species? And how are planets different? You know, when you start comparing these other things, well, then that gets more into, like, wisdom. That's kind of, like, more difficult. And then you start learning what numbers are, what living creatures are. And this is generally what people think philosophy is, and Aristotle agrees, too. That once you start looking at, well, what kinds of things are there, and how are they different or similar, this is kind of what the highest science is. And it has something to say about numbers and how they're different from, like, a person or a language or, like, the idea of, you know, some idea you might have.
What do you mean?
Well, like, this means that...
Do you mean they're just different things or you can't apply them because one person, two persons?
Well, oh, no, like, what are numbers? Like... You may not have, you know, a clear, you know, actually, I think, well, it's how things are different. But anyway, like, what this science is, is what he's going to argue about. And it has to do with what sorts of things there are. And what are the most general concepts of things. And it's not a science of specific facts. So like when you learn arithmetic, you're actually kind of just learning specific facts, right? But then in another sense, you're learning very, very general concepts. And once you get a set of, you know, concepts, then you start generalizing from that and building on it. And that is, so mathematics was actually considered one of the more close things to wisdom in ancient times, because it was useful not just for, like, building things, but for, like, you know, doing business and lots of, you know, lots of things. There was really no limit. Predicting where planets were and all kinds of things.
Mm.
That's why people were so amazed with it. It was like magic. So anyway, that's that's one thing he's talking about here.
Well, we already know, like, they just kind of invented a way to keep track of where we were in the counting.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, I think we went on about that enough, and I'm going to. But the rest of this chapter does deal with what we're talking about, so we're not leaving it behind. Okay, so he has a, oh, this is interesting because he starts talking about myth.
Mm-hmm.
Myth for him is important. He always comes back to myth. So here he is. This science is not a science of production. It's clear even from the history of the earliest philosophers. For it is owing to wonder that men both now begin, and at first began, to philosophize. They wondered originally at the obvious difficulties, and then advanced little by little and stated difficulties about the greatest matters. For example, about the phenomena of the moon, and those of the sun and of the stars, and about the genesis of the universe. And a man who is puzzled and wonders thinks himself ignorant. Whence even the lover of myth is also a lover of wisdom, for myth is comprised of wonders. Therefore, since they philosophized in order to escape from ignorance, evidently they were pursuing science in order to know, and not for any utilitarian end. And this is confirmed by the facts. For it was when almost all the necessities of life and things that make for comfort and recreation had been secured that such knowledge began to be taught. Evidently, then, we do not seek it for the sake of any other advantage, but as the man is free, we say, who exists for his own sake and not for another's, so we pursue this as the only free science, for it alone exists for its own sake. So he's talking about wisdom, the highest science. Every other science, even those sciences which people pursue for their own sake, like mathematicians, you know, if you love math, you know, and people do love math, they're passionate about it, and music, and poetry, and other things which are inherently good, architecture, all these things he thinks are subsidiary to the most supreme science of them all, which is first philosophy. That's the word he uses. But later,
that was the first science.
Well, you could call it the first
science. Or the metaphysics or something.
Metaphysics, yeah. That's a later word that people applied to it.
Mm.
And like Aquinas in his work, you know, many years later, called it the sacred science. Because it's done for its own sake. You know, all the other sciences serve it and not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, so you can see he keeps on coming back to the idea of more good and goodness as the essence of science. And this is something which is at odds. You know, in the modern era, people think that you can have truth or you can have the good. But you have to have some trade-offs, or like truth can just be bad, or goodness can be untrue, you know.
And he doesn't believe this, but...
Well, then what the heck happens when somebody lies to you about something good? Or, I don't know. Or lies to you about goodness, like... I'm confused. Like,
oh, well, that's just a factual matter.
Like, well, then what happens? Do you just ignore it and pretend it doesn't exist?
Oh, they lie to you about something that's good?
Yeah.
Well, that's bad.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
so, and that thing, the truth, is bad, not good.
No, but, like, a lot of people think that there could be something. I, you know what? It may be the case that there are certain things which are true, but should not be known to everyone. It could be the case. Like, for example, I heard that someone, when the theory of evolution were explained to them, they thought, gosh, maybe it's true, but I hope nobody believes in it, you know? They didn't want everybody to believe in it. That's an example of something which perhaps, maybe, everybody shouldn't know.
Why not?
Well, because... Well,
why didn't they want them to believe?
Oh, well...
Or why didn't they want
them to believe? You'd have to ask them. For them, maybe it conflicted with their religious beliefs.
Oh.
But even if you didn't have a religion, you could say, well, wait... Humans didn't evolve to believe in evolution. So if a few people believe in it, that's not so bad. But there may be horrible things that happen if everybody believed in it. You know, because people didn't evolve to believe.
Would it be like a Noah's Ark thing?
And what would happen? In what way?
Well, if everybody, like, apparently everybody was just had evil in their minds all day long or something.
Oh, yeah.
Then, like, I don't know, if nobody was, like, part of that religion or their beliefs or, I don't know, would that, like, affect their god, sir, you know?
Well, I don't know. It's hard to, no, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what you're saying, actually. Like... Oh, I think about this often when I think about Adam and Eve. There were two trees in the garden, and one was the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then Eve walks up to the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the serpent says, well, God doesn't want you to eat this fruit because he knows once you eat it, you'll become wise.
But no, but that would be different because she did it and... They both got punished, right?
Yeah.
Now, if everybody did it and we all got punished.
Well, we all have been punished because they got punished. According to the story.
No, I mean, okay. I mean, it happened again with a different religion and for different reasons.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's true. It has happened again and again, according to the Bible.
Jeez. Cool.
But anyway, but that's the, anyway, so like, but Aristotle thinks it's always going to be awesome for people to know more. But that it's inherently difficult, and therefore very few people will know it. But that only free people, so it's like even the concept of knowledge is based on goodness. And there's this, like, in the modern world, people can think, are used to the idea that, well, evolution is true. It's one of the most elegant, parsimonious scientific theories ever. And yet, a lot of people think it's bad. And that we should just not think about it. Or ignore it.
Or you should just, like, no, it's horrible. Just ignore it.
Well,
it's not going to work.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of people who are of that opinion.
Mm.
And so Aristotle just wouldn't understand it until you explained, and he might come to understand it, but he's definitely expressing the counter view here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now he's going to get into God. Now, watch this. This is cool. Hence, also the possession of it, that's the sacred science,
mm-hmm.
might be justly regarded as beyond human power. For in many ways, human nature is in bondage. So that, according to Simonides, quote, God alone can have this privilege.
Bondage?
Bondage, yes, like slavery. So even Aristotle thinks that human nature is in slavery. So, and according to Simonides, God alone can have this privilege, unquote. And it's unfitting that man should not be content to seek the knowledge that is suited to his nature. If, then, there is something in what the poets say, and jealousy is natural to the divine power, it would probably occur in this case above all, and all who excelled in this knowledge would be unfortunate. But the divine power cannot be jealous. Nay, according to the proverb, quote, poets tell many a lie, unquote, nor should any other science be thought more honorable than this sort. For the most divine science is also the most honorable, and this science alone must be, in two ways, most divine. For the science which it would be most meet for God to have is the divine science, and so is any science that deals with divine objects. And this science alone has both these qualities, for, one, God is thought to be among the causes of all things and to be a first principle, and two, such a science either God alone can have, or God alone, God above all others. All the sciences, indeed, are more necessary than this, but none is better.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, it's cool that he thinks God can't be jealous. When, like, it's funny, in the Bible it says, my name is jealous, right? It's the opposite, right? So.
No, there was like a whole church ceremony about God being jealous or something.
Yeah, God's a jealous God, you know, and, you know, when Jesus comes back to defeat the evildoers at the end of time, he's got jealous tattooed on his leg.
Jeez.
That's funny, huh? But, like, but it's the opposite. He thinks that God is fine if you study this. And, you know, actually, God doesn't care about anything. Everything cares about God, and that's what makes the world go round, according to him. But this is what God thinks about all day. Is the highest principles. Whatever they are, that's what God thinks about all day, according to him. And there's a lot more to this. He proves this, according to him, that something like this has to be true in order for the planets to go around in circles. Like, literally, there's no other explanation for circular motion other than this.
Oh, right, yeah.
But, like, we'll get to that later on. Yet, this is the next paragraph. Yet the acquisition of it must be, in a sense, in something which is the opposite of our original inquiries. For all men begin, as we said, by wondering that things are as they are. And they do about self-moving marionettes, or about the solstices, or the incommensurability of the diagonal of a square with the side. For it seems wonderful to all who have not seen the reason that there is a thing which cannot be measured even by the smallest unit. But we must end in the contrary, and according to the proverb, the better state, as in the case in which these instances too, when men learn the cause. For there is nothing which would surprise a geometer so much as if the diagonal turned out to be commensurable.
What?
So do you know what he's talking about with commensurability?
No, I don't know what that word means.
Okay, so you know about pi?
Yeah.
Okay, so pi is what? What's a... pi is an irrational number. Have you heard that word? Okay, well, maybe not. It's fine. It's no big deal. I have no idea when they teach that.
Yeah, no.
So, like, pi is a number that it's 3.15159 blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many... there's, like, no end to the digits.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps on going forever.
That's what irrational is?
Irrational, yeah. You can never... what it really means is you can never, ever express it as a fraction.
Mm-hmm.
As a ratio of whole numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a never-ending decimal. And the ratio... if you have a square, then if this side is 1 of a square, then this is the square root of 2. And the square root of 2 is a never-ending decimal. So that means if you can't, like, have a unit of the side and measure precisely the diagonal as a however many of those. Whereas, like, if you have, say, for example, the area or the perimeter of a square would be 4 times one side. Or the area of a square would be, like, one side times the other side, right? So that those are all, like, the area can be measured by the units of the side. The perimeter can be measured by the units of the side, but the diagonal can't be measured at all. And so, actually, this was pretty shocking to the ancients. According to some legend, there was a person in a Pythagorean cult, which is kind of like yoga, but with math.
And stuff?
Yeah, they're vegetarians. Yeah. Anyway, one guy, they were studying geometry, and they found out that the diagonal was incommensurable, and the circumference was incommensurable with the radius, and they thought this was horrible. And one guy threatened to reveal it to the world, and they killed him. They threw him off a boat. He was going to flee on a boat, but some people snuck on the boat in disguise and killed him during the voyage.
Oh, my God.
So, like, because they thought it was so horrible that there could be something that was so simple and such a fundamental thing as the diagonal of a square or the circumference of a circle, and yet it was a complete, like, non-number. It couldn't be like a ratio of whole numbers. Everybody in the ancient world thought that whole numbers were, like, more real than, you know, non-whole numbers. And the fact that something simple could be, like, incommensurable was just so shocking to them. That was a real surprise. And it was almost as if you discovered that, you know, the coolest person in the world was actually, like, okay, remember when Marvel Comics tried a storyline in which it turns out that Captain America was actually a Hydra agent all along? They did that a couple years ago, and they had, like, Captain America was actually an evil Hydra agent, right? Well, that's about how shocking it was. But Aristotle says that once you understand the principles, then you know that it couldn't be commensurable. You see that, like, any surprise that you would have was just wrong. And so that's another thing that wisdom would do. You know things, and people who don't know are just shocked. They just constantly say things like, I don't see why that should be the case. Why couldn't you just measure the, you know, circumference by the radius, you know, or something? Why couldn't you just do it? Well, just measure it more exactly, you know, or something like that, right? But, like, you know, and, you know, there's lots of things I don't understand about physics or whatever, but, like, it just doesn't gel with my intuitions. That's because I don't know, you know? So, anyway. And that's what wonder.
How do you times, like, a number by pi, or, you know, how do you use it in math? And, like, if it's irrational, then how does it, like, how does that work?
Oh, you just approximate it. You just decide how many decimal places you're working with.
Oh, okay.
So, especially with real measurements, there's always a certain limit to how exact your measurements are, and you just choose that many places. Mm-hmm. And you just arbitrarily choose how many decimal places you want.
Cool.
So we have one last paragraph of 3 lines. We have stated, then, what is the nature of the science we are searching for, and what is the mark which our search and our whole investigation must reach. So, that is So he considers that these first two chapters have given you the basic idea of what he's looking for. And what is it? It's a certain, like, form of knowledge, which is the best
and the most... first knowledge, then?
Yeah, it's the first. So it's first science. It's kind of like what's necessary for everything else. But it's so deep and distant from common sense that it's hard for the mind. It's like, you know, anybody could see that, okay, I throw one sock here, I throw, you know, another sock there. Oh, there's two socks. That's the simplest thing ever. That's not wisdom. But like thinking about, well, what the heck is two anyway? Where does two come from, right? You know, that is like, and we'll talk a lot about where two comes from, because people wondered where the heck two comes from quite a bit back in the day, back in Aristotle's day. So anyway, that's what wisdom would be. You would know. Oh yeah, that's what numbers are. Numbers are different. Numbers are not like you know Lego pieces. Or in some ways they are like Lego pieces. You know, in some ways they're like socks, but in other ways they're different from socks. You know, and you would know what sorts of things there are and how they're different. That's what his science is. It's a science of what kinds of stuff there are. What's the kind of stuff there is, you know, and how is each kind of stuff different? But how are they the same, too? How do they hang together? And that's one modern science philosopher, I mean. I think his name was Wilfred Sellers. He said that philosophy is the science, or no, the study of how things hang together. So, like, how does a human being who is a living creature, how does that living creature hang together with the number two? What's the relationship? Such that you could say of a living creature, it ought to believe that 2 + 2 = 4. You know? How do you get that? How do you get from the nature of Homo sapiens to like some abstract thing that was uncreated and existed before the Big Bang, right? There's some relationship there. And so that's what metaphysics or first philosophy or whatever it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you study math your whole life, I don't know if you may have some wisdom on this subject, but it's almost out of your field, right? Mm-hmm. You know, mathematics is really about what happens once you just accept numbers, that they exist. And then you go from there.
But you don't know what came before?
Yeah, you don't know what came before. So in that sense, metaphysics is more authoritative and more universal and more primary than math. So there you have it. I don't know.
That's weird. I'm going to be thinking about that, like, all night.
Well, that's good. Yeah, it's kind of freaky. But, you know, in the modern world, people have questioned this concept and thought that perhaps math is is equally ranked with natural science. Well, most people think that natural science has replaced metaphysics. Yeah, which is, you know, that's the common thing. But then you can ask them, well, what's math then? Is math about nature? Well, they have no idea what math is, right? Because no one knows what math is, right? Unless you, like, you know, if, I don't even know if metaphysicians know what math is, or philosophers, but at least they can argue about what math is, right? But mathematicians very often have no opinion on the matter, or don't care, you know, or don't treat it seriously. Because really, it's not their field. But anyway, so there you have it. So he's, in a very preliminary sense, he's kind of defining what he thinks should happen. So I think we, at the beginning of our thing, we talked about, you know, what's primary wisdom? And here he says, okay, it's a science, but it's not a natural science. And it's not math. It's not logic. It's something like above those. So this sets his view apart from the view that natural science is wisdom, right? And so that's one way in which, but what about myths, right? He's talked about, so for him, when he talks about myths, that's him talking about his religious stories that he grew up believing in as a child, right?
Mm.
Like Homer was their Bible. So it sets him apart from the idea that faith is the highest wisdom too. But he's not really facing that issue head on yet. He doesn't do very much with that. His main focus in the metaphysics is to show that his science is sort of better than natural science. That's where we'll start. But maybe later on we'll get more idea about his relation to religion.
Wait, what is the definition here of natural science again?
It's the science of things that change in space and time. That's what he'll talk about. If you read The Physics, which is another book that's very similar to this, but just deals with natural science, then he says it's about things that change in space and time.
Yeah, I think that natural science is above math, because I think you need math to do natural science, but then you, like, natural science is the base. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to see. Well, like, yeah, so you could say that math is needed for natural science.
But natural science is needed for math.
Is it?
Well, if you just have, I mean, you could have a zero, that's kind of math.
But like, no, you could study math and not know anything about natural science, right?
Oh, you mean null? I was thinking, like, having, like, actually there being natural science. Like, if there's no space, time or movement and form or
oh, that's interesting.
Like
where'd you
that.
Get that idea that there could be no space time?
I didn't get that idea, but I think of like, so we have a blank spot, there's just nothing in it.
Yeah.
It's not even a vacuum, it's just there's nothing in it. I guess it's a vacuum. And then like you put objects in it, and then we already have math. We take out the math, and there's not really anything there.
Well, I don't know what you're talking
but
about.
But if we have math, then we also need natural science.
Well,
they come together.
You can have math without natural science.
Well, then what is it?
Math.
No, well, yeah, you could study math without natural science. But you couldn't have... Okay, yeah, I'm trying to explain to you what I thought.
You couldn't do math unless you had a brain to think with? Is that what you mean?
I mean, that's a point to...
Yeah. Well, okay.
No,
what,
that's not what I was thinking.
Okay, well,
but I'm explaining what I was thinking, which doesn't really matter.
Okay, well, you know, what you were saying earlier, that there could be no nature and no space and no time, there was actually a guy that argued that space and time were not really real, and that, like, if you went into studying space and time and treating it like as if it should really make sense, you're making a fundamental mistake.
That's
and
weird.
You're always going to be led into paradoxes.
Why?
And then, so he says there's two paths that you can go by with your mind, the way of seeming,
mm-hmm.
and then the way of truth. This is Parmenides. And then he was the teacher of Empedocles. And so... And Aristotle deals with him a lot. And Aristotle just rejects the idea that there could be, that time and space are illusory. He deals with that in the physics, right? He thinks it's ridiculous.
Idea.
But he deals with Parmenides a lot here too. And Parmenides seems to find that there's a lot of, if you assume not just time and space, but multiplicity, that there are multiple things, then you get all these paradoxes. But I think Aristotle answers his views. But that idea that there, you know, there might just be nothing or one thing, you know, then the multiple things that look different are just kind of not really real. That was taken seriously back in the day, you know. So anyway, and that just reminded me of Parmenides. But anyway, we're not really ready to talk about him yet, but you're like, you just said something which foreshadows a thing which we'll probably spend maybe one or two whole episodes on later on.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so, but that's kind of what it is. So in the next episodes, he's going to go like, okay, so the next episode is about materialism. So he starts with people who focus on matter. Like, so what we think of as natural science, these people were totally dead on, like natural scientists. And they just treated matter and energy as being the fundamental thing. And so in the next few chapters, we'll learn a lot about how Aristotle views what we think of as natural science. But we'll also learn about a lot.
How the heck does Aristotle know what we think of as natural science? Well,
because when you hear about Thales and these other physicists, like they're called physiologoi, which means people who talk about nature, it's cognate with physiologists.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's people who talk, there were these whole group of people who just talked about nature. And they say, well, what is nature? Well, I think it's, there's some fundamental particle and everything's made of this stuff. You know, and it's just rearranging these little bits of stuff. And that's what makes us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what the physiologoi came up with. And Aristotle's going to talk about them for the next few sections. So I think and then after that, he's going to go into the weird people who think about numbers and who think about ideas and weird spiritual realities. And he's going to reject both of these and have, like, his own theory. So I think we've talked enough, unless you've got, like, a burning question. I'm going to turn it off. You're good?
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Half asleep.
Well, thanks. I hope you keep on thinking about math and stuff, because we're going to keep on talking about it.